Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This is For the Record program number 231, entitled Caution, Lone Nuts at Work. In For the Record program number 228, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, we read an article about a man in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, who appears to have been a racist killer. He certainly appears to have been. He has not been convicted at trial yet, but he allegedly shot a couple of Indians, an African American, and a Jew. And we're going to update that story, and we're going to update it with a story from the San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, May 1st of the year 2000. This is an AP story datelined Pittsburgh. It's by Jeffrey Bayer, B-A-I-R, headlined, Suspect Has History of Mental Trouble. Subtitled, Man Arrested in Death of Five Had Been Hospitalized, Attorney Says. And what we're going to do in this article, in this program, I should say, is to explore whether or not this man is really a lone nut. He might just be a lone nut, but he might be much more than that. Getting into the article from 5-1-2000 from the San Francisco Chronicle, the man arrested in a killing spree that left three immigrants, a Jewish woman, and a black man dead, had a history of mental illness and irrational fears that he was being watched, a former friend and his attorney said yesterday. Police searching the home where Richard Scott Baumhammers, B-A-U-M-H-A-M-M-E-R-S, 34, lived before Friday's attacks, also found a manifesto indicating he was trying to form a political party opposed to immigration, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported. The document, which included Baumhammer's signature as chairman, unquote, of the Free Market Party, advocated the rights of European Americans and denounced third world immigration, according to a prosecution source whom the newspaper didn't name. Quote, from what I saw and from what I read, it seemed to advocate violence, the source said. Mike Manco, a spokesman for Pennsylvania District Attorney Stephen Zappala Jr., said yesterday he had no comment on the Post-Gazette report that Baumhammers had been trying to recruit members for an anti-immigrant party just days before the shooting. More about the suspect, skipping down. Baumhammers' attorney, William Diefendurfer, said yesterday that his client had a history of mental illness, though he wouldn't elaborate. And skipping down still further, a neurologist who had befriended Baumhammers in an internet chat group about the Eastern European country of Latvia, where Baumhammers' parents were born, said Baumhammers often expressed paranoid ideas and sometimes believed he was being followed. Skipping down still further, Baumhammers was trained in immigration law, but he hadn't practiced in recent years. He listed his parents' address for his business, Baumhammers Law Firm. Police said he made frequent trips to Europe, particularly Latvia. Note the Latvian heritage, that may or not be relevant. Note the fact that he practiced law and that he made frequent trips to Europe. First of all, if you're traveling to Europe frequently, that means somebody has to be paying for it. If the guy wasn't practicing law, who was paying for his trips to Europe? And we're going to talk about Latvia in just a second. Still more about this particular suspect. And again, the fellow, in addition to killing a couple of Indians, that is to say Indians from India and not Native Americans, and an African American and at least one Jew, and having painted a swastika on a synagogue and written the word Jew, we're going to read another article from the same day. This, however, is from the San Francisco Examiner of May 1st of 2000. This is an article from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It's datelined Pittsburgh. It's by Dennis B. Roddy, R-O-D-D-Y, and Bill Heltzel, H-E-L-T-Z-E-L. It's headlined, Slaying Suspect Was Treated for Mental Illness. Subtitled, Prosecutors Still Trying to Determine If Killing Spree Was Racially Motivated. Now, bear in mind, this guy's been portrayed as a nut, a lone nut. He might be that. Bear in mind that all kinds of elements have mind control capability, including various intelligence services and elements of what I call the Underground Reich and the Aryan Nations, as we've looked at in past broadcasts. And note also that many of the ideas that this individual was promoting, although certainly not something I would agree with, are ideas that are extant in the various fascist milieu, particularly Europe. I would note that Hitler was made out to be a lone nut as well. Hitler was very more than a lone nut. He wasn't mentally ill. He was evil. He was a Nazi, but he was not a nut. Again, from the San Francisco Examiner of Monday, May 1st of the year 2000. The man charged in last week's shooting rampage through several suburban Pennsylvania communities had a history of mental illness, believed he had been poisoned on a trip to Europe, and tried to recruit members for a right-wing anti-immigrant political party, according to his lawyer and acquaintances. Richard Scott Baumhammers, 34, an attorney who once studied immigration and international law, is accused of targeting racial and ethnic minorities in a two-hour rampage Friday that killed five and left one man critically wounded. Investigators seized computer equipment and writings about race from Baumhammer's home to determine if the shootings were hate crimes. The evidence will help prosecutors decide whether to seek the death penalty for Baumhammer's. Skipping down, a woman who spoke on condition of anonymity said she had been a patient with Baumhammer's at St. Clair Hospital in Mount Lebanon in May of last year and said he told her he had been poisoned while in Europe. And note the journalistic spin on this. It was delusional, said the woman, who had been admitted for depression. Quote, he told me he was a lawyer and did international business, and then when he was over in Europe, he was over there several times, that he was poisoned, unquote. I would note he was a lawyer, and he appears to have done at least some kind of international business, it's not clear what, or on whose behalf. Whether or not he was poisoned, I cannot say. I would not entirely dismiss the possibility that he may have been placed under mind control, either by some intelligence service or quite possibly by underground Nazi elements, who also may have been associated with intelligence units of some kind. Germany is certainly one of the possibilities that stands out. There are others. Continuing with this article, police confirmed that Baumhammer's made regular trips to Europe. And again, I would interject, who paid for those? He was not practicing law, but he was a lawyer. Continuing, a search of his parents' home turned up dozens of business cards from various European companies, and police said they had indications Baumhammer's had visited Latvia, his father's birthplace, earlier this year. Police found what one prosecution source described as a three-page manifesto that Baumhammer signed as chairman, unquote, of the Free Market Party, which the document described as advocating the rights of European Americans and which denounced third world immigration. Baumhammer also registered the party's name as an internet site earlier this year through a Pittsburgh company. The site was listed among other far-right groups in various places on the World Wide Web. His party's charter, according to those who found it at his parents' home in Mount Lebanon, complained of the plight of European Americans who were, in his view, being overrun by other races. Police Lieutenant David Walsh confirmed that investigators had found a manifesto and said it spoke about a third-way political position. The Third Way, also known as the International Third Position, is a neo-fascist philosophy that has gained popularity in Europe and among some of the American far-right in recent years. It is critical of both capitalism and Marxism, and its adherents often single out Jews and racial minorities for criticism. In January of this year, Baumhammer's put together a page on the World Wide Web for the Free Market Party, containing its manifesto and registering it in his name. Several other sites included a link to the Free Market Party site, including the Council of Conservative Citizens, a white rights group that was at the center of controversy when several Republican members of Congress spoke before its gatherings. Now, there are a number of points to be made about this article and about this situation. In the first place, I want to note that Mr. Baumhammer's may very well have been more than just a lone nut. He was traveling relatively frequently to Europe, including the Latvia that was his parents' place of birth. Note that for future reference. I also want to note that his views don't necessarily have to be viewed as those of a nut. He was advocating the rights of European Americans, denounced third world immigration, and was trying to form an anti-immigrant party. Anti-immigrant sentiment is characteristic of reactionary politics and European fascist politics in particular. Racism is certainly deplorable, but not nutty, and not necessarily an indication of mental illness. I want to note here that this article says that his political manifesto spoke about a third way political position. Bear in mind that he was a lawyer who listed his parents' home as his address. He was not, however, practicing. Who paid for his trips to Europe and where did he go, I would add? Note that the fascist third position, it was the focal point of two miscellaneous programs, Miscellaneous Archive Show 19 and 21, both done in the spring of 1988, and the fascist third position or third way is not an indication of mental illness, but of fascist political orientation. I would also note that the website for his fledgling political party, an anti-immigrant political party, had links to, that party, by the way, named the Free Market site, had links to, among other institutions, the Council Council of Conservative Citizens. This, from the text, indicates that they linked to him. Now, the Council of Conservative Citizens is an overtly racist political institution that had featured Trent Lott, the Senate Majority Leader, among others, as speakers at its functions. We've looked in the past at links between the Council of Conservative Citizens and the National Alliance, and this is not, the Council of Conservative Citizens is not an institution of lone nuts. I would note that in a miscellaneous archive show about the shooting of Ronald Reagan, we note that another supposed mental patient, John Hinckley, in fact, had been a member of the National Socialist White People's Party, was expelled because they thought he was a government agent. His older brother, Scott Hinckley, was going to do a business deal with Neil Bush, George Bush's son, the day after the shooting. Another member of the Bush family was dating a member of the Hinckley family. His father, John Hinckley Sr., was George Bush's number one primary campaign contributor when he was challenging Reagan for the presidential nomination. And I would also note that his father was active with an organization called World Vision, which had fronted for the Central Intelligence Agency in Latin America and Southeast Asia, according to a couple of different publications, including the Christian Science Monitor. I would also note that George Bush was director of the Central Intelligence Agency and stood to benefit if something happened to Ronald Reagan. That certainly the circumstances suggest very strongly that John Hinckley was far more than a lone nut. Do note that the Fascist Third Position, or Third Way, is not a lone nut organization, but a fascist political orientation. The same thing with the Council of Conservative Citizens. We've noted in numerous broadcasts in the past, including a recent update on Eurofascism for the record program number 229, that anti-immigrant sentiment is very much a centerpiece of reactionary and fascist politics around the world, including around the First World, including and especially Europe. Reviewing very briefly the beginning of a Los Angeles Times article from Friday, April 28th of the year 2000. This is an article by Carol J. Williams. It's headlined, Danes Cast Cold Eye on Immigrants, subtitled, Denmark's Tight Controls Reflect Europe's Intensifying Dilemma. While industry sees an expanded need for skilled labor, nationalist appeals are closing doors. And skipping down, we read, Immigration has become one of the most volatile issues confronting the major European Union economies as falling birth rates foreshadow huge labor shortfalls over the next few decades. And then the article goes on to describe the reaction to that. With the rise of the far right in Austria behind the xenophobic rabble-rousing of Jörg Haider and the soaring ratings of Denmark's populist Danish People's Party, European nations have been reacting to such forecasts with anguish and resistance. So I would note that this anti-immigrant stance is not characteristic of lone nuts. I would also note that Baumhammers was traveling frequently to Europe, paid for by gosh knows whom, and that he was visiting the Latvia that his parents were born in. Latvia had has a very strong fascist tradition, as we looked at in For the Record program number 229. Reviewing now from the Searchlight of April of the year 2000, we read, this is an article by Sam Vitovsky. It's headlined, Latvia, SS Jackboots Tramp Again. Veterans of the Latvian Waffen-SS marched through Riga last month, commemorating their first joint operation with the Nazis against Soviet troops 57 years ago. Around 4,000 ex-SS veterans and present-day nationalists marched under the flags of the Latvian Republic from the Dome Cathedral to the Freedom Monument, where they laid flowers. The march included 10 members of parliament, members of two nationalist parties of the ruling coalition, and the opposition Latvian Social Democratic Labor Party. This is the second time that former Nazi collaborators, who were members of the entirely voluntary Latvian SS Legion attached to the 6th SS Corps, have taken to the streets to commemorate Legionnaire's Day, unquote. They marched for the first time in 1999 after Latvia's parliament had declared March 16th a day of remembrance for Latvian soldiers. On that occasion, the SS men were joined by the entire leadership of Latvia's armed forces. So note again that Latvia, to which Richard Baumhammers had been traveling, has a fascist tradition and one that is explicitly being celebrated by elements of its political and military establishments. I want to note that in a number of different respects, there are superficial similarities between Richard Baumhammer's and Francis Parker Yockey, the focal point of Kevin Coogan's remarkable text, Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International, published in softcover by Otano Media and copyright 1999. We're going to review some aspects of Francis Parker Yockey's career, and I want to note some of the superficial similarities to the apparent circumstances of Richard Baumhammer's life, and the question that I'm asking is Richard Baumhammer's perhaps more than the lone nut we're told he was, and rather an agent of the Underground Reich? We're going to listen to part of an interview now with Kevin Coogan, author of Dreamer of the Day. Tell us a little bit about Yockey and what you call the Shadow Reich, and perhaps include a little bit of his operations on behalf of the Third Reich in its above-ground phase.
Well, I link Yockey with the Shadow Reich because after World War II, with the defeat of Nazi Germany, a lot of the apparat of Nazi Germany essentially had to operate underground. The analogy that I use is really a comparison with the Confederates after their defeat in 1865 by the Union, where organizations like the Ku Klux Klan really formed a kind of a parallel sub rosa government. And essentially the same thing happened in post-war Europe. Yockey's connection to this was that Yockey functioned as both an ideologue and as a liaison between those forces and elements of the far right in the United States as well.
Tell us about Yockey and H. Keith Thompson.
Well, H. Keith Thompson was one of Yockey's good friends in New York. H. Keith Thompson had been affiliated with the German intelligence before World War II. He was a protege of a man named George Sylvester Viereck. And Viereck had been, both in World War I and World War II, essentially a brilliant propagandist for the Nazis. Well, in World War I for the Kaiser, and then in World War II for the Nazis. And in fact, Viereck wound up in jail at the end of World War II. Essentially, Viereck was a very old man by the late 1940s, and Thompson inherited Viereck's position. And so that when Yockey met Thompson in the early 1950s, he began working closely with Thompson, and Thompson also helped finance Yockey's travels.
Now, H. Keith Thompson also was one of these people who functioned on behalf of the Shadow Reich, as you call it.
Yes. H. Keith Thompson was actually very much involved with a man named Admiral Dönitz. Dönitz had been the official successor to Hitler after Hitler committed suicide. So in a certain sense, he was the Führer of the Third Reich. And people like Thompson recognized Dönitz as the legitimate ruler of Germany, although Dönitz was actually in a jail cell. He had been convicted for war crimes and spent until 1955. He was in prison, in Spandau prison. But essentially, he represented a kind of image of the sort of government in exile that Thompson swore allegiance to, certainly not to Konrad Adenauer, who he saw kind of as an American puppet. So basically, Thompson was an American coordinator for this sort of Shadow Reich operation that had also another important base in Buenos Aires, where a lot of the hardcore Nazi exiles operated in the late 1940s and 1950s.
If you would relate for us briefly, and I realize this is a tall order, Yockey's relations with a couple of people named Johann von Leers and also Werner Naumann, two operatives of this Shadow Reich.
Well, Leers had been a leading propagandist in Nazi Germany and had written tons of kind of anti-Semitic and actually occult books. After the war, he went into exile in Argentina and became the editor-in-chief of a publication called Der Weg, which really means like kind of the way or the path. Now, Der Weg had been very much involved, the people involved with Der Weg were very much involved in the operation to get Nazi war criminals exfiltrated into safety in Latin America. For example, one of the major figures in Der Weg was a man named Hans Ulrich Rudel, who had been a former fighter ace for the Nazis, and later headed up something called the Rudel Club, which was involved in underground, really smuggling operations of getting these war criminals out to safety in Latin America. Another wing of this operation was a man named Werner Naumann, who had been actually the Minister of Propaganda after Goebbels committed suicide. In other words, at the, you know, in 1945, when the Führer bunker is under attack, Goebbels committed suicide. After his suicide, Hitler appointed Naumann as the new head of the Ministry of Propaganda. Now, the reason why this is interesting is that von Leers also worked very closely and had been a part of the Ministry of Propaganda. So in a certain sense, Der Weg was the continuation, sort of in exile, of the Ministry of Propaganda. Naumann later surfaced in Germany in the late 1940s, and he became famous because the British High Commissioner, a man named Sir Yvonne Kirkpatrick, organized a raid against Naumann and arrested him and some other top people and accused them basically of conspiring to set up a right-wing political party which would basically serve as a kind of a, kind of like a shadow party to where ex-Nazis could really sort of operate in public.
Tell us about Francis Parker Yockey, the advocate, the lawyer.
Well, Yockey had gotten a law degree from Notre Dame University in 1941. His legal career, though, really is of interest to us in 1945-1946, because what happened is that he got himself appointed as a lawyer to the War Commission's tribunal in Germany. He was appointed working for the United States. He was sent to Wiesbaden, West Germany, and worked as an appeals lawyer during the process when essentially in Wiesbaden, I mean, there were so many people who had been arrested for war crimes that there were kind of like first-tier and second-tier war crimes trials. The first tier really took place in Nuremberg, and that involved, you know, Goering and Hess and all the most famous people. But there was a second tier of trials that involved camp guards and lesser-known figures, and this was taking place in Wiesbaden. And Yockey worked in Wiesbaden as a lawyer in that process. Now, what he did, and he worked there from really 1946 to mid-1947, he got into the files and actually sent material from the files to a man named Maurice Bardèche, who was a Frenchman who began the first kind of Holocaust denial propaganda in Europe in books that he wrote attacking the Nuremberg trials that appeared in France in 1947 and 1948.
Didn't Bardèche have a background in the Waffen-SS, or am I confusing him with someone else?
No, he didn't. Bardèche was a literary critic. His big friend was a man named Robert Basilich, and he had been a guy who had been actually executed after the war for collaboration in France with the SS, and he, in fact, did go into exile with the Germans in like 1944, 1945.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. Now, Francis Parker Yockey also was very much the world traveler. He traveled all over if not all over the world, certainly to Europe frequently, and did so under multiple identities. I wonder if you'd fill us in on that.
Well, he traveled, this is one reason why the FBI couldn't find him, because he had many false passports. His travels were really quite extraordinary. I mean, he went all through the United States. He was in Canada. He was in Mexico. He was in Cuba. He went all through Europe and even into the Middle East, namely Lebanon and Egypt. So his track record, and also I believe, I've shown in the book that I also believe that he went into East Germany as well, and it was rumored, and it could well be true, although I could not prove it, that he may have visited the Soviet Union as well. So essentially his whole kind of mode of existence was as a sort of an underground courier and operative all throughout the 1950s. And essentially this is what finally led to his downfall, because in 1960, as part of his travels, he was traveling so much, he lost his luggage on a plane, actually flying from Washington to San Francisco. And when the luggage was opened to sort of locate where to send it to, this is when the workers, not from the FBI, but from American Airlines, found, when they opened the luggage, a whole series of false passports. Yockey had four false passports, and this basically led to his being captured.
One of the things that you relate concerning his evasion of authority and law enforcement as an operative of what you call the Shadow Reich is that he actually had himself, I don't know if it was actually checked into a psychiatric facility, but certainly certified, so to speak, precisely so that he could be classified as a mental aberrant rather than a conspirator.
Well, this is one of the most mysterious and fascinating parts of his life, and it actually begins during World War II. What happened is that Yockey was drafted into the military in 1941. He then mysteriously disappeared. He went AWOL from his army base, and for 3 months was absent. And he later returned and claimed successfully that he had had a mental breakdown in the missing 3 months. It was later determined, however, that he had actually, during those months, had actually gone to Mexico City. And Mexico City was a very interesting place because it turned out that when Yaqui was living in Chicago in the late 1930s, he knew a man named Herbert Hans Haupt, who later became a very important sabotage agent for the Nazis and was arrested with 7 co-conspirators and actually executed by the American government in 1942. Haupt had been brought to the United States by submarine, by U-boat, in an operation the Germans called Operation Pastorius. Haupt, before that time, when Haupt was still in the United States, he'd actually himself gone to Mexico City as part of an escape plan to get himself back to Nazi Germany. So the fact is that Yaqui, far from being insane, actually went on this very, still to this day, very mysterious trip to Mexico City and then came back. But at the point when the government, the really G2 Army Intelligence, instead of backtracking what Yaqui was doing, when he first resurfaced, he resurfaced claiming that he had this terrible mental breakdown and was hearing voices and was basically just crazy. And so the Army took him and they put him in a mental institution, and he lasted for about 3 months and then got actually a psychiatric discharge. So because he used the claim of mental instability, the other investigation, which would have been an investigation for going AWOL, where did he go, etc., never got off the ground.
Kevin, I think you, if not doing the impossible, you've certainly qualified for the Olympics in terms of telescoping your massive work. We've been speaking with Kevin Coogan, the author of Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yaqui and the Post-War Fascist International. It's published in softcover by Otano Media and copyright 1999. By the way, Otano Media can be contacted at P.O. Box 568, Williamsburg Station, WILLIAMSBURGH, Brooklyn, New York, 11211-0568, USA. Phone and fax, 718-963-2603. And you can visit their website at www.otanomedia.org. That's one word, AUTONOMEDIA.org. And by the way, the book was edited by Dave Mandel, who has an air slot on WFMU-FM in East Orange, New Jersey, which airs these programs. That, again, an interview with Kevin Coogan. Note some of the superficial similarities, perhaps more than superficial, between Richard Baumhammer's and Francis Parker Yaqui, certainly being anti-immigrant, being associated with the third position or third way, and having links to the Conservative Citizens Council and hailing to one's Latvian heritage are not necessarily indications of being a lone nut. I would note that in August of 1999, Buford Furrow, an Aryan Nations fellow traveler, went off in Los Angeles, killing one person and wounding a bunch of Jewish school children. He also had checked himself into a mental institution, perhaps to cover his A blank blank as well. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.